News Talk Breakfast. In association with AIR. Seamless connections with Ireland's number one broadband provider.
Now, positive soundings from Dr. Tony Holohan yesterday.
In broad terms, I think, given the progress we're making in terms of vaccination, notwithstanding where we're at with the disease, we think that we might, in the coming weeks, be in a situation where we're able to reach the kinds of requirements that we think need to be reached to enable us to move away from some of the economic and social restrictions.
OK, so that was Dr. Tony Holohan speaking at NPHET's briefing yesterday. One of the most optimistic briefings I would suggest we have ever heard from NPHET. So are we finally coming out of this pandemic? And could we too one day, quite soon, see our own Freedom Day here? Joining me to discuss all of this is Professor of Immunology and Director of the Kathleen Lonsdale Institute for Human Health Research at Maynooth University, Professor Paul Moynagh. Paul, good morning. Tell me this. What's your reaction to what Tony Holohan was saying last night? It's as optimistic as I can recall ever hearing him.
It is very positive, Ciara. Yeah, I think for a number of reasons. So first of all, you know, we recall a number of weeks ago the projections were not very good, and we were hearing like very large numbers, like 700,000. Whereas now what we seem to be seeing is a decrease, for example, in the day-on-day increase that we had been seeing. The percentage of those cases end up, of confirmed cases end up in hospital, that percent is going down. The duration of hospital stays are going down. And if we look to other countries like the UK and Scotland, again, where the modelling and the predictions were quite very serious, again, they seem to have reversed the trend. So all in all, and obviously this is due to the vaccination programme, and it's essentially, I think, as Philip Nolan mentioned yesterday, it's now a disease of the young. So those who are vaccinated are very well protected, and the young who get it, fortunately, they're quite resistant to the disease. So I think we're getting to the stage where I think we're getting very close. A number of countries like ourselves, like the UK and most countries in Europe, I think we're getting very close to the end of the pandemic phase, and we'll probably move more into an endemic phase where the virus will be circulating in the background. But thankfully, most of us will be protected by either vaccination or natural immunity through infection, so that it'll prevent us from getting very ill, very sick.
You mentioned, as did Philip Nolan, this is now a disease of the young. Is that the argument for vaccinating the young? We're rolling it out for 12 to 15-year-olds. We're looking at it for children younger than that. What's your view? The risk-benefit ratio shifts a little bit with age. What's your view about vaccinating children and young people?
Yeah, I think as you said, the benefit-risk ratio decreases as you go down in age. So, for example, if you're looking at it this week, we've obviously been discussing the vaccination of the 12 to 15-year-olds. Fortunately, if there's anything positive from this pandemic, is the fact that the young have been quite resistant to the virus, at least in terms of developing serious COVID. There are some exceptions to that, but generally, it's a very mild disease in the young. So the benefit isn't as great. There are some risks, and one of the risks that has appeared is this one of myocarditis, which is inflammation of the heart muscle. And I just noted some of the statistics coming, for example, the Ministry of Health in Israel, and they were the first to push out the Pfizer vaccine. And what we see here is that if you look at the frequency of myocarditis, they've cited levels maybe 1 in 20,000, but it's more prominent in men, young men, so it's down to about 1 in 3, 1 in 6,000 if you just look at men. And it's especially notable in the 16 to 19-year-old groups. And I'd be especially interested in terms of finding out what the frequency is in the 12 to 15-year-olds. Now, we don't have that from the clinical trials, because those clinical trials were so small. It has been rolled out in the real world in many countries, including the US. And that was rolled out in May and June. It seems to be only apparent, mostly apparent, after the second dose. So since this was rolled out to the adolescents in the US in May, June, we should be at a phase now where we begin to see that data specifically on that cohort of 12 to 15. And so again, some countries have decided actually to delay until seeing that data.
I think in fairness, both you and I would be very pro-vaccine, so we're not coming at this from an anti-vaccine perspective. But when you say things like myocarditis in between 1 in 3 and 1 in 6,000 people, I would imagine that the risk of COVID causing complications in children, serious complications, as opposed to perhaps long COVID, and I'm not dismissing that, but you know what I mean. Surely, are they not much of a muchness, or indeed, very potentially, that vaccine has a greater risk?
No, you're absolutely right, Kira. So if you look at, for example, some of the very serious conditions in children, that can be associated with infection itself. For example, this multi-system inflammatory syndrome. If you look at something like that, it could be in the region of maybe 1 in 20,000 in children. But the interesting thing there is that if you look at the comparisons, you're looking at vaccinating all children, whereas the number of children that would be infected, you know, that would be much less. And I think something else that would be really useful to know is the percentage of our children that have already been infected. We don't know that figure, whereas other countries like the UK, for example, have done seroprevalence studies, and if you look at the percentage of children, it's much higher than you would have expected. Okay. So that's something
else. So just lastly, before I let you go, do we need more data on this for our children? Because, you know, as I say, both of us are very pro-vaccine. Both of us, I would suggest, believe absolutely that vaccines are the way out of this thing. But do we need more evidence? Do we need more data around these figures?
I think more data will help care. I don't think we have to wait that long, to be honest, because I think, you know, it has been rolled out in the real world. You know, it is there, big numbers in terms of the US. What I'd especially like to see is just that figure in terms of the prevalence in the 12 to 15-year-old, just to make sure that that frequency doesn't increase in younger age groups. And Professor Karina Butter, who's chairing NIAC, she's been clear as well, saying it was a marginal call. I think the recommendation has been that those who are especially at risk should be vaccinated, and I certainly agree with that, the 12 to 15-year-olds.
Because again, the risk-benefit ratio changes with that group. Look, thank you very much for that insight this morning. That is Professor of Immunology and Director of the Kathleen Lonsdale Institute for Human Health at Maynooth, Paul Moynagh.